Welcome back to another episode of the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast. My name is David Wiener. Great to have your company once again, because A-League's fans, we have another bonkers round to look back on.
And Lolly! Oh, that's a brilliant goal from Joe Lolly. It's Sydney FC's first goal of the new season. What a start for Upok Talle.
Looks for an option, finds one in Ryan Teague. And the Oniru gets his first ever A-League goal.
Clisby does just that and opens the scoring. What a hit from Jack Clisby. Here is the moment. Tom Wanningham finally has a goal in the Isuzu Ute A-League. Off the other side of the bar, Stamatolopoulos. And the scoring streak continues. And he does so here. 3-3. What a moment for him. At Amy Park with an equalising goal in the 93rd minute.
It's really quite ridiculous, but it's been another ridiculous weekend. A weekend where on 90 minutes on Sunday, the Wooden Spooners from last season were about to knock off the premiers from the season before to go top of the table. And 3-4 minutes later, we had a 3-all draw and a 6-goal thriller. A weekend where Sydney FC have gone and put 5 on Adelaide. Against, now I'm going to steal a stat brazenly from our social team here at the A-Leagues, where on October 29, Adelaide United demolished the reigning premiers Melbourne City 6-0. November 3rd, Melbourne City defeated Sydney FC 2-0, leaving Sydney FC to sack their coach. And on November 11, Sydney FC go to Adelaide and win 5-1. That is our league. Tom Smithies and David Davidovich, the band is back together. Dave, what a weekend. That concept was my highlight, that you just don't know what's going to happen when the weekend starts in our league. What was your highlight?
Yeah, good luck doing the math on that one, Dave. Maths was never my strong point, but it is quite mind-boggling. Look, two highlights for me over the weekend. Firstly, the volume and quality of the goals I thought was really exceptional. Some outstanding goals and some really good goals from some young talent that we'll unpack during the podcast. But the other highlight for me was, I know, you know, interviews can get a bit stale and whatnot. And kudos to broadcasters Lucas Ronaldo and Zappa, who had two of the tougher interviewees, subjects over the weekend. So Lucas, with Carl Veard coming at him, suggesting that the Iran Kunda question was, I think, silly, quote unquote. And then there was Zavada evoking the spirit of Zava from Ted Lasso, with Zappa suggesting that he was probably among the best strikers in the league, and he retorted with, "I am the best." So both of them, I think they got caught out a little bit. Weren't sure what the follow up questions were going to be, but we love a bit of confidence and a few little tanties from coaches as well.
I would have loved Zappa to say, "Are you sure?"
Might have been an even briefer counter response.
So, Tom Smithies, as I bring you in, would you say you're one of the two best journalists on the talent boundary today?
Put me up against Davidovich, and I'm pretty confident. Tell you, my least favourite moment of the weekend was having a match report ready to go at 83 minutes of Melbourne City against MacArthur, and then having to tear that up 5 times. That was bonkers, to use your word from the beginning. But also, I'm just going to put a little boat in for the return of Corey Brown at Brisbane Roar after, I think it's something crazy, like 88 weeks he's been out. Big dispute with the club, new administration of the club. Issued an apology to him and reintegrated him to the first team squad to the degree that he actually started against the Mariners, which quite remarkable, having been out for so long. So just a little human interest moment in amongst the blizzard of goals.
March 2022, his last outing for Brisbane Roar. And there are so many of those little stories to talk about throughout this podcast. And they already have been already this season. And Corey Brown is another one. Great to see him back. Well, let's go back to the beginning. Friday night, Melbourne victory against Wellington Phoenix, 1-1. Ryan Teague with the opener on 14 minutes. Then the own goal from Damian De Silva.
Straightens up, the cross in is a brilliant one. And it's an own goal. Just as it was last week, despite dominating, victory find themselves pegged back. It's 1-1.
1-1. Dave, this had one of the most peculiar stat lines I think we've ever seen, with big fat zeros for Wellington Phoenix when it came to goals, big chances, XG. They've gone away with a point. What did you make of this one?
Yeah, bit to unpack from that game on Friday night. I mean, victory were dominant all over them early on, but they didn't capitalise. And Wellington showing that they'll be more than a plucky team this season. They were very good as the game wore on, and even though it was a De Silva own goal. I mean, Zavada was lurking at the back post. He was ready to tap that one in. And, you know, that essentially came, and a lot of their chances came from just the pressure that they put on Melbourne Victory. But, look, I think both of those teams, you know, they're at the pointy end of the table. They're both looking really good. Again, for Victory, I think there's a lot of positives to take from it. I thought Ryan Teague's goal was an outstanding team goal, a late running to the box, you know, fantastic interplay in attack, and a great cross from Jason Guerrier. So lots of positives for Victory. Again, an unbelievable bench with, you know, Raya, Konomidis, Falami, Brimmer, and Lino, the youngster who they're getting more minutes into, all coming off the bench. So they would have been really disappointed not to take 3 points away from that, but they are still a work in progress.
Yeah, Tom, 18 shots in the game for Victory, 7 on target. The last couple of weeks, you feel like with a bit more luck or a bit more polish, they would have been home and hosed possibly by halftime of both of these games, but they weren't. So there's a bit for them to work on despite the cavalry there. But which way do you look at this, the finishing of Melbourne Victory or the resilience and the growing resilience and tough-to-beat approach of Wellington Phoenix still under Giancarlo Italiano?
I think Phoenix are more resilient than we expected, but they definitely got away with one. Today's phrase that the Victory are a work in progress sums it up. They are a typical Tony Popovich team. They always grow. His teams always grow. They always get fitter during the season. But he's also rebuilding, and he's rebuilding with a lot of young talent and putting his faith in a lot of young Australian talent, and which is, you know, is going to be intermittent. It's going to be hit and miss. It's not you're not relying on players who know how to do it week in, week out, have got all that experience. But the upside is huge. So I think Victory will get better. And later in the season, if they were in that situation again, I think that they wouldn't miss the opportunity to take the 3 points.
A couple of VAR decisions, Dave, that played their part in this game. I mean, the great irony of the stats I just spoke about with the one-all scoreline was at one point you thought Wellington were going to get the chance to go 2-1 up just before the halftime break, but that was brought back for an offside in the lead-up to a penalty appeal. And then Wellington as well had an opportunity again as well. So Victory got a chance later on that was overturned from Wellington. These incidents are on aleagues.com.au if you haven't seen it. It was a week full of different incidents, Dave, but by and large, you've got to say that when you break most of them down, they actually probably were mostly correct.
Yeah, that's true. Worth having a look at. If you haven't had a look, I think everyone will have an opinion on it. VAR is an interesting one. I mean, it's been a hot topic overseas in the Premier League as well. Yeah, if you do break it down, they probably got it right. But again, I'll go back to when VAR started. And I'd love to get Tom's thoughts. We were both covering it, you know, back in the News Corp days pretty heavily back then, but very, very different to what it was meant to be brought in for, you know, to overturn howlers. And I just feel that the games are just so stop-start because there's so much, you know, so much is being referred back to VAR. There was even an incident in the Mariners Brisbane game on Sunday where there was clearly an offside for Brisbane, I think, late in the game, and they kept their flag down, which, you know, again, I think might be a directive. But, you know, Keltax had to make a 30-meter sprint, and, you know, the flag's inevitably gone up. I mean, a player can get injured or, you know, something could happen in that situation. So I think, yeah, it's being over-refereed, over-VAR'd, in my view. And also, I think the you know, the referees just are too reliant on it.
So invited to praise referees. David Davidovic is unable to do it, even though he starts by admitting they got the decisions right.
I feel sorry for them. I think the issue is VAR, full stop. And I really feel, I mean, Ange Postecoglou made some strong comments, you know, last week. And I agree with him in that, you know, the referees have lost their power. So, yeah, it's, I'm not sure what's going to happen with it, but, yeah, what are your thoughts, Tom?
And just before that, Tom, as well, just to put context around that, what this isn't a direct issue of the A-League's interpretation of it either. It's a broader It's a broader issue, which is why...
Correct.
Sort of,
this is a global issue. This is absolutely a global issue.
And to nip it in the bud and go, they were correct. Well, if you take out the forensic line and look at the offside and the lead up to a penalty decision and you take it all the way back, that's why I'm almost to say, let's move on because it was correct in a deep, let's not go through every incident of the weekend approach. Philosophically, there's a bigger discussion here, which you've just sort of hinted your thoughts on. And Tom, sorry just to butt in there, but that's the context here. It's not saying it's an A-League thing. It's just a general approach that football is experiencing right now, of which the weekend process, where some of those moments were punctuated by VAR decisions, we're very much in the middle of that conversation.
I think what it comes down to is the finding the consistency. When you've got lots of VARs, it's noticeable. Some weekends you get lots of VARs, lots of different ones, and you get lots of different interpretations. And it's very difficult to have that common bar when you have different people, so many different people in charge during the games. And the Premier League has exactly the same issue, is finding that bar of intervention. And it's all we can do is hope that the referee chiefs in all of these leagues continue to press that line, that unless it's an absolute, it's not, would I have given a foul there? It's, is that a disaster of a decision? And that's got to be the bar of intervention. We don't want games to be re-refereed. We don't want the power taken away from referee. We want when something's horribly wrong, you know, a penalty's given and you can see on the replay that it's a dive, then you get involved. Those game-changing decisions that have been gotten wrong need to be changed. Other than that, just sit back, put your feet up, enjoy the game.
Moving on from that, back to the football. Dave, you mentioned him a bit earlier, Ryan Teague. Very interesting character developing in the league this season, showing maturity from his experience abroad, coming back, getting first-team football, which he was looking for, relishing it, showing the experience he gained abroad, not just on the park. I even think in the way he talks off the park too, and then arrived late in the box on the weekend to put away what was a quite beautiful opening goal.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he's been very good this season. He got signed pretty late in the piece, got a couple of preseason games under his belt, and since then he's very much owned that, you know, number six, number eight role, whatever you want to call it. But you know, beautiful, elegant left footer, great passing range, and you know, that goal sort of underlined, you know, his all-round capabilities as a midfielder, a perfectly right timed run into the box, and you know, a fantastic finish to cap it off. So very interesting that Popovic has gone with Teague as well as Fabian Monch in midfield, when they've got Brimmer, you know, even Lee Broxham on the bench, you know, a number of different options there. So, you know, I think Teague, I mean, his form's been very, very good. And, yeah, clearly the last few years in Portugal have, you know, done him well, even though he probably hasn't played as much football there as he would have liked.
Another one I want to get a word from both of you on, because you both covered him in your respective beats back at the Daily Telegraph and the Herald Sun, was Costa Barbarousis. Milestone game for him, 300. He joins a very elite group of players who have done that. And also, you know, it's not inconceivable the way he talks about how he's, you know, looking after his body and you know, maintaining his speed as well. You know, he might be targeting Lee Broxham's all-time record too, the way he was talking, because you forget how long he's been around. A word from each of you, you first, Tom, on a player who has been so, you know, he's been around now and so consistent part of the furniture of the A-Leagues for a long time and is still exceptionally fast for someone who's in, you know, the later years of his career.
Still exceptionally fast, and I think he's back to doing what he does best. You know, his Sydney FC years will not be the ones he looks back on most fondly, I suspect, because he was being asked to do something that wasn't, he's not a natural striker, and he was being asked to do that a lot of the time at Sydney, the way that they played, and it didn't suit him, and he missed chances, and you could see his confidence was affected, and it's hard to see, because his attributes are skill and doing things off the cuff, particularly out wide, and I think it's yeah, it's good to see him back doing what he does best.
Yeah, great. Brisbane Roar and Melbourne Victory was Costa Barbarousis at his best. You know, he was obviously the youngster breaking into that Brisbane Roar Ange Postecoglou side early on. You know, had a few stints overseas as well. But, yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's very much epitomised this Wellington Phoenix side in terms of the work rate and the attitude. That's one thing that's really stood out to me this season. I think it was his pressure that, you know, that led to, you know, the chance for the goal. So, yeah, kudos to Costa, and at the tender age of 33, still clearly looks like he's got a few years ahead of him.
Well, 81 games off Lee Broxham, so he'll be counting those a couple more seasons to try and knock that off. And well done to Wellington. First time in their history, they've gone the first four games undefeated. So momentum building there at a time where, of course, we've spoken about it with Auckland looming in the background too. So great to see that happening there. Western United 0, Newcastle 1.
Off the other side of the bar, Stamatopoulos! Newcastle get the first goal, and the scoring streak continues for Apostolos Stamatopoulos.
Yeah, another goal from Apostolos Stamatopoulos, the 44th minute goal here against the run of play, Tom. You'd have to suggest, first half, I thought Western looked the better of the side. Daniel Pena looked like he was a level above everyone else controlling the game, but the Jets got the goal to go ahead and held on to it for a really valuable 3 points for them on the road, which doesn't happen particularly often.
No, there were moments in a number of games across the weekend, men and women, where you see a game change on one moment and Pena hits the bar. You know, if he scores that goal, Western probably go on and win it. They get that breakthrough, then Newcastle have to chase the game. But the longer it goes on, Newcastle are more and more comfortable. And it's the width of a crossbar. I'd love the moment before the game as well with Pena, the respect he showed him. Going to high five and embrace people on the bench, all the staff he worked with, genuinely showed how much he enjoyed himself at Newcastle, and he just seems to be a good guy. John Aloisi said he was happy with the performance, just not the result. But that's three games now in a row, and eventually you get to a point where players start wondering where is the win going to come from. I understand why he's talking up the performance, and it was particularly first half was a coherent performance, but they need a win and quickly.
Yeah, Nikita Rukovic had a goal disallowed in the 86th minute that would have leveled proceedings, but as Tom alluded to, Dave, that's three games without scoring as well since their opening day win for Aloisi's side. Pena was a joy to watch. There is something there, but. Final ball, that's what it looked like to me they were struggling with. And I thought even at the end, there was a moment where Thurgate and Risden, it's that kitchen sink time late in the game, and they had their wires crossed again. And I thought, oh, that sums it up here. You've been really good until that moment. And that's probably to Tom's point, where they probably have to get that over the line sooner rather than later.
Yeah, both sides were really desperate. I mean, Jets were just desperate to hang on to the result. They did whatever they needed to do late in that game. They were, winding that clock down, and they were obviously delighted. There was even a shot of Robbie Sanson with a few minutes to go. He couldn't watch the game. He had his head in his hands. I think he closed his eyes for the last 3 or 4 minutes of that match. Western United were too desperate to score, and I think that's been part of the problem, and Pena almost epitomises that. Echo Tom's sentiments. Wonderful scenes at the start of that game. I had a chat to Pena in the preseason, and he's gone through some real heartache on a personal level over the last year or so, and his wife's been very ill, and he wanted to come back to Australia. He said it was his happy place, and he really loved his time at Newcastle. So it was great to see. But back to the football. Too desperate, Western United. They're really trying to force the issue, and Pena is just so desperate to get off the mark himself, get his team, scoring. And I think it will come. They will, like a lot of teams, they will get better. But again, someone like Nikita Rukavica, who came, on the eve of preseason, that's his second appearance. He got a solid 35 minutes in. I think with another, decent two-week training block, he probably puts his hand up to start in that next game. And I think that makes a big difference to them. And I wouldn't be surprised, even though he did come on for Noah Bodic, wouldn't at all be surprised if they start as a front two. But also rubbing salt into the wound is that former Western United attacker Stamatopoulos scored the goal. That's 4-4 for him. So, again, great signing for the Jets.
We mentioned
Ryan. The goal and celebrated hard against his old team as well.
And so he should. So we mentioned Ryan Teague as a developing name in this season, Tom. But so too is Stamatopoulos, who Robbie Stanton said he's come back with a real winning edge from his time abroad, is becoming a key part of the side. 24 years old now, I think. And his goal, his performance was a key reason why the Jets were able to end a 6-game losing streak on the road.
Yeah, his performance as much as the goal. I mean, he gives them a you know, what's the right word? Not that he leads the line well for them, and he's giving them a point to their attack. I think in the broader sense, it's interesting that Robbie Stanton is working on such a small budget at Newcastle, and he's having to look for young signings, players with points to prove. And he seems to have an eye for that kind of player, because his team is working extremely hard. And there are players in there who are unfashionable, but they're getting the results and are doing rather better than we probably tipped them to do.
Indeed. Well done to the Jets for their first win of the season. And they have had moments in every single game. And you'd say on the sum of the four games over the opening month, they do deserve to break their duck and get that 3 points in the bank.
Latchman heading it away, brought down by Russell. And it crosses the line. Does it? Was it a bit of a friendly fire? It does cross the line.
Western Sydney 2, Perth Glory 0. This, gents, was an impressive performance from Marco Rudan's side at home. They are still undefeated. They are still yet to concede at home. Two absolutely cracking goals day from Jack Clisby and Tate Russell in the second half broke the deadlock. And I think those two moments of quality probably sum up to some of the excellent attacking play we saw from the Wanderers on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, they were very good. They were sharp. They were clinical. I mean, in Clisby's case, you know, he basically knocked young Benny off the ball, and, you know, Benny just being 17, still filling his body out. He'll learn from that experience, because he was in a really good position to, you know, to block the run. But look, in the end, the Wanderers, they're looking good. They're looking really good. They're picking up points early in the season. Again, they're going to get better because they've got so many new signings. But really great to see Tate Russell back and, you know, getting on the score sheet. Missed a lot of football with that knee injury last season. And, and there's a lot of depth in that right back spot for the Wanderers, isn't there, with Clure and Simmons. So got his opportunity and he took it, although Brandon Borrello almost cost him the goal by being on the goal line. Thankfully, he was just behind it. So I think he got winded after that unbelievable strike from Tate Russell. But Tate's an interesting player. He's a real, you know, jack in the box. I mean, he's got almost 70 games under his belt. So him now, you know, back to his best gives Rudan some, you know, some fantastic options at right back. But they're looking good, the Wanderers. And again, Milos Ninkovic coming off the bench next game, the Sydney Derby. So he put his hand up for, you know, potentially a starting berth. So yeah, Wanderers and Marco Rudan would be absolutely loving life at the moment.
For those TikTokers out there, jump on and have a look at the cut the A-League social media team did of that Brandon Borrello getting decapitated in his own goal by Tate Russell's strike. It's a good laugh. Tom, I think I cut you off there. You about to say something?
Yeah, I think Clisby's really interesting. In the Australia Cup, I remember watching him put in a cross, like a perfect cross, left-footed, and I can't remember who it was against, but it just suddenly made me remember what Jack Clisby could do. And he's drifted from club to club at times. He's been up and down. But maybe he's at the age now, back at the Wanderers, maybe he's feeling comfortable enough. He's surging forward every week. It's become a really important attacking outlet for them. Interestingly, though, overall, I thought Wanderers were very good. I also thought Perth were quite unlucky not to get something out of the game. As always, well set up under Alan Stadgets. And David Williams on another day is, you know, he's millimetres away from two goals, which changes the complexion of the results. So I think it's interesting how much Rudan wanted to talk up how well his team was doing ahead of the derby. I think they're extremely well set up. They've got some really nice attacking patterns. But I think that Perth also showed that when you take the game to them, you can also create chances.
Just to round that out, Tate Russell, it was his first goal in 588 days. And you mentioned up and down, Tom. Fullbacks played a key role in how good the Wanderers were in moments. And it was probably fitting that the two of them got those two goals. But you mentioned Marco Rudan talking about the side's form. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Yeah, look, I'm happy for the players and for the fans. You know, it keeps us on top of the table for the time being, with a break coming up leading into the derby. I think that's a fantastic position to be in for our football club, and it gives us momentum into what is arguably the biggest game, you know, of the season for us.
Subscribe to that, Tom, or you think that might have been a bit of, you know, a good bit of talk in the media heading into the derby, or to begin the derby talk?
I think that heading into the derby is the most important part of that. It's absolutely mouthwatering that Rudan's talking up the fact they're top of the table when Sydney FC have just won I've won. I love an international break, but I also wish, in a way, I wish it wasn't happening because I want to get straight to the derby.
You know, it's funny. He would have said that we're top of the table at the time. He would have spoken. Sydney would have been. It was before the Sydney results. He would have known very well at that moment. Sydney were rooted to the bottom of the table. Dave, to talk about Perth for a moment, you mentioned Benny before in that incident, but he was actually quite bright in moments. It was his ball that Williams could have converted. Kolakowski looked good again coming off the bench. Perth are going to be absolutely fine. They've just got to probably look for a bit of luck on the road too.
Yeah, absolutely, and agree. I mean, that was just isolating one, you know, moment for Benny. And to be honest, I mean, credit to him for getting so deep in terms of defending because, you know, he was playing in that attacking role. But, yeah, they look good. They look, they've shown good signs this season. They obviously missed Adam Taggart the other day. I mean, David Williams, that was, I think, his first start of the season. But, like Tom said, I mean, he could have had a couple of goals. I mean, there was that fantastic strike from outside the box. So I think they're fine. They're certainly looking like a team that could challenge for the top six. But, yeah, it's a tough trip, you know, away to Wonderland. So, plenty to look forward to for the glory.
It is, but they do deserve a change of fortune on the road because it's been, I think it's one win from 24 away or out of Western Australia or something like that. So it has been tough, but as Alan Stady said after this game, I think this showed everyone that they can compete. If the Wanderers top of the table, you call them a benchmark at the moment, Perth competed with them there. We're a month in, guys. I'm just going to channel, before we move on to the next game, I'm going to channel Rudin talking about them being top of the table. Who has impressed you most? This is a question without notice. But after that performance on the weekend, I thought of the Wanderers. They probably have set the benchmark so far, undefeated, not conceding at home, starting to play some good football. Do you subscribe to that, or is there anyone else that's jumped out as the early sort of pace setter for you in terms of form, Tom?
I think it's if I say a low bar, I don't mean literally. We've talked a lot about the teams who are playing not well, if you know what I mean. We've talked a lot about Sydney FC struggles, Melbourne City struggles, both of which led to the change of a coach. We talked about Mariners struggles, and there's been a lot of focus on that. Whereas there are teams who are building quietly. You know, Wellington, four games unbeaten. Melbourne Victory, I just talked before about how Popovich's team always grows slowly. MacArthur, you know, they were a few moments away from knocking off the Premiers, and they would have gone top of the table if they'd done so. So it's kind of a story of heavy underachieving and quiet overachieving is how I'd sum up the league table at the moment.
Yeah, we said at the start of the season that it was really open, and you know, nothing that's happened since makes me think otherwise. I mean, yeah, Wanderers, Victory, Wellington, MacArthur, all locked on 8 points, and you've got, you know, 3 points separating them and seventh place Newcastle, and 4 points separating eighth and ninth. So I don't think anyone's been outstanding throughout, but Wanderers would probably be the top of the pops in terms of, I guess, consistency. Although, you know, Victory's first two performances I thought were very, very good, and they've obviously dropped points in their last two. But, yeah, Wellington, in terms of where you thought their starting point was, they've been super impressive for mine. Adelaide United have showed amazing glimpses, and then they absolutely, you know, fell off a cliff at the weekend. So, yeah, it's really tantalising to see how this season unfolds, because I think there's so many more twists and turns to go.
Well, so much can change in a week.
Fabio Gomez! Unbelievable! Less than a minute played at the start of the second half, and Sydney FC increased their lead to 5.
Yeah, Adelaide United 1, Sydney FC 5 at Cooper Stadium. What do you make of this? Joe Lolley with his superb brace, Jaden Kucharski with a brace of childhood dreams, and Fabio Gomez with his goal to make it 5 for Sydney FC. This is ridiculous, Tom. What a bounce back from Sydney FC to open the Ufuk-Tala era.
One of the great all-time new manager bounces. The funny thing is, it's a new manager and yet it's not. But Ufuk-Tala knows so many of those players so well. He said himself, I don't know how well I can claim for that. I've been here 3 days. But clearly the players, for whatever reason, felt liberated. I thought Roy Donovan in the broadcast was interesting, saying, like, you have to think the players have stopped playing for Steve Corica, because for them to turn around such a performance like this 3 days after a new coach is appointed The intensity was there. The intensity that's been lacking all season and was lacking way too often last season. They were first to the ball. They were first to the second ball. They were first into the tackle. They just went at Adelaide. Do you remember, in the same way the Mariners did last season, that showed that if you really go hard at them and go early, that suddenly Adelaide can panic. And their execution was superb. Brave of Talay to put Jaden Kucharski in straight away for his first start. And look how he's rewarded. Again, Talay will know Kucharski really well from having been the assistant coach at Sydney previously and then having, you know, coached against him. So I think he's going to have fresh ideas. Joe Lolley was playing far more centrally, it seemed, and there's new ways of playing. It's not going to have that effect every week, but if they play with that intensity every week and they added to the quality that they've got, then suddenly Sydney FC are a very different proposition.
By the way, you're back on your top five players in the league. That looks all right now after last week's smash up from Dave. That's the Joe Lolley we thought would come through this season with that brace. Dave, your managers can sometimes make us, he might not have known what he doesn't know what he did in those first 3 days, but you do a little subtle thing like playing the 20-year-old Kucharski from the start. And it's just a subtle thing, but it's a sign. Something's different. And it might have been as simple as that, but there was a different feel, a different vibe about Sydney FC. The moment they came out of the blocks and pressed aggressively, pressed with energy, looked more mobile, everything about them looked like it was a different unit.
Yeah, spot on. Without knowing the intricacies of what happened in those 3 days, Ufuk Talay clearly made a difference. We know he's a very good coach. I mean, he's an outstanding coach. His Wellington teams have played great football. Any player that I've spoken to that's played under him speaks nothing but highly of him. You can make a statement with your selections, and Kucharski and De Jesus at right back starting, I think, you know, sent a bit of a message to, you know, to the team. You know, we spoke last week and the last couple of weeks about how, you know, Corica perhaps could have, you know, given some of the younger players opportunities, and the fact that Kucharski scored the brace at the weekend, you just wonder, you know, if he had of given some of those younger players a bit more of an opportunity, could they have turned things around? But yeah, obviously that's been and gone. And yeah, I mean, just to backtrack for a moment, I mean, when we recorded last week, Steve Corica was still in the job. So I think it's really important to pay tribute to his immense contribution to the Sky Blues as a player and then as a coach, an outstanding record. You know, and I'm sure he'll be relaxing now, having a coffee, and I'm sure a break will do him well. And there's no doubt that he'll come back. He's a fantastic coach. And, you know, obviously there's another club that, you know, will get a fantastic coach in Steve Corica at some stage. But back to the current Sky Blue squad, they're looking really good. And Joe Lolley, on that form, he's absolutely in the top 10 players in the league, if not in the top five. He was superb with his couple of goals and the assists. And Kucharski, by the way, I mean, those two finishes were unbelievable, extraordinary composure. Still had lots to do for the first, and the second one was an outstanding finish.
Can we just go back to you admitting you're wrong there, Dave? Because you sort of skated over it for a moment. But 19 years for Steve Corica at Sydney FC is extraordinary. And you're right, we should pay tribute to the work that he's put in. And a lot of it was not glamorous work. A lot of it was academy coaching and assistant coaching, and learned from a lot of good head coaches, delivered ridiculous success, like took over seamlessly from Graham Arnold, who just delivered what we thought was going to be a, you know, possibly short-lived and very successful era at Sydney when he went off to coach the Socceroos. And it was seamless the way Corica took over. Now, whether he was then able to oversee the transition to a new style and new playing roster, etc., that became a more difficult issue. But 19 years at a club, so much success delivered, so much service delivered, that he is a Hall of Famer and, you know, should be absolutely up there.
Yeah, and it's a hard decision. Sydney have made it early and a hard decision, just like Melbourne City did with Rado Vidicic. But you can't deny that sometimes time just you just need a change. A change is as good as a holiday, and you just got the sense with Sydney, until they made that hard decision, we would have been having the same conversations. That said, the moment there is a stand or a pitch or a something to be named after someone at Sydney FC, now that Steve Corica has moved on, he should be the first person in line to have that named after him, because his contribution to the club is you know, is indelible, and he is an ornament to Sydney FC for everything he has achieved there. On the other side of the fence, though, the victims of the bounce back were Adelaide United at home. And I just want to ask you guys what you thought about this, because as you mentioned, Dave, they've been brilliant so far. But I saw a stat going into the weekend, which I've dug up now, and their XG. Now, we're getting into the XG areas here, but which I don't like to dwell too much into, but these ones were pretty amazing when I read them. That in attack, they were performing 4.3 goals over their XG, and defensively, they were 4.5 better than their XG heading into this game. And it kind of bubbled to the surface, Dave, in a very, very comprehensive defeat.
It did. I must admit, I'm not probably the greatest XG anorak, if you like. I'll let you distill the XGs. But, yeah, I mean, that was just extraordinary. Like, five goals, you know, to concede five goals, and they've got a bloody good keeper in Joe Gauchy as well. They were quality finishers. They were shell-shocked. I mean, you could see it through, you know, Carl Fiat's post-game interview and, you know, the press conference, etc. But, look, sometimes, you know, teams have bad days. Again, when you have young, so many young players, you do get that inconsistency. But, you know, for that to happen at home, yeah, was, I think, a bit of a wake-up call for Adelaide United. But look, I've got no doubt they'll bounce back. And to answer Lucas Ronaldo's question, they did miss Nestor at Iran Kunda. I mean, how can you not miss a player like that? So, you know, even Issaïs being on the bench, you know, just that experience, like in a game like that, you can just picture him, you know, just slowing the game up, you know, fouling, doing what he needs to do just to, like, you know, pull the handbrake up and, you know, stem the tide. But, yeah, a great learning for Adelaide United. But notwithstanding, it was a great occasion, great crowd, great atmosphere on Saturday night. And thankfully for the home fans, they got to celebrate at least one goal.
I think the really important thing is what happens next with Adelaide. It's only a few weeks ago that we were talking about this team that the fans were unhappy that there hadn't been signings. And then suddenly they started at this incredible rate of not scored nine goals in the first two games and such brilliant football from their young players that everyone was like, oh, everything's okay. But some of those question marks are still there over, you know, you probably can't sustain a whole season based on those kids. And you're right, Dave, the difference Issaïs the previous week against Melbourne Victory was absolutely integral to the way that they set up and they held off Victory, whereas they just got blown away. It's also a freak result, in the sense that not many teams are going to play like Sydney did, with the dynamism, the energy, and the intensity that Sydney did, where it all came together. But the important thing is how they react to that and rebound and show that that was a one-off, as opposed to the first 3 weeks of the season being the anomaly.
Well, that's exactly what Carl Vitt said, wasn't it? That he hopes it was a one-off. They were blown out of the water early doors. They didn't expect how good Sydney were going to be. And now it's all about how they deal with it going forward. Nestor Iran Kunda will be back, of course, from suspension. He is this week's star in A-League's All Access on Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And that will be a great look at one of the up-and-coming talents in our league, and also discussing the fact of what he had to learn after last week, which we spoke about. That does feature in the episode as well. So Nestor Iran Kunda, A-League All Access, is one certainly not to be missed. Now, one not to be missed, though. Well, if the weekend wasn't mad enough by now, Melbourne City MacArthur, 3-3.
Well, what a pulsating, breathless finish at Amy Park.
Tom, I'm just going to... why don't I read through the timeline and then you can talk us through how when you on aleagues.com.au duties on Sunday afternoon, you went from a lovely, you know, you probably had the kettle boiling, get your coffee ready for the next game, and then you went on an absolute typing frenzy. Jamie McLaren, 58th minute.
Galloway crosses, McLaren is there.
Uli says De Villa, 61st minute.
For Davila! And they have, pretty soon indeed, less than 60 seconds.
Then it started to go absolutely bonkers. Jake Holman, the 83rd minute.
The follow-up, up the post and in, from Jake Holman.
Matt Miller, the 88th minute.
Miller, for the final touch, superb football.
Okay, 3-1.
Oh, and McLaren, and perhaps there's still time.
Jamie McLaren again in the 90th minute, and then Terry Antonis.
And he does so here, 3-3.
With the late, late, late penalty, 4 goals in 10 minutes. What did you make of that?
You're giving me PTSD here. it was frenetic, is the only word to describe it. And such a strange game because MacArthur set up so well and relatively comfortable at keeping City at Bay. City did have a couple of chances. Leonatol should have put them ahead earlier than they were. A good shot from the edge of the box and then dribbled into the box in the second half and shot wide. But generally speaking, City were pretty disappointing. The rhythm, the patterns of play that we saw from them under Kisnorbo and initially under Radovidić were not there. Occasionally you'd see it. There was one move in the second half where they went from right back out to the left wing and a low cross in from Bajic, which caused sort of chaos in the box, but they couldn't convert. And there weren't that many clean chances. And then suddenly the absolute sucker punch, classic away team performance, led by the magnificent Ulysses De Vea, like wonderful goal and two wonderful assists to set up a 3-1 lead. They should have absolutely seen that game out, but then they've lost their heads, in the words of their own coach, Milos Joski, and to credit to City coming back so strongly, but absolutely bonkers game of football. Yes, well, we nearly had everything that game, but not quite everything.
And I nearly made a gag I shouldn't have. Dave, it was a crazy game. But this was this period, like we can analyze this from every angle, whatever, but that period is this league. That's our league. The game is never, ever over, even 3-1 down heading into the 90th minute.
Yeah, that's spot on. A few people got caught on the hop with that one, going the early crow. But look, I mean, you cannot underestimate the importance of that point for Melbourne City. The fact that they came back, I mean, to be brutally honest, 3 or 4 weeks ago, that maybe ends up being a 4 or 5-1 loss for them. But the way they came back, even Antonis, after he put away the penalty, he grabs that ball, runs to the center circle. They wanted to win that game. So as much as they weren't overly convincing in terms of their broader play, the signs were really good. And I think Aurelio Vidmar, it will take time to, you know, put his own stamp on this team. I think it will be very different to, you know, to what it has been, certainly in the first few weeks under Radovidić. And I think Aurelio will relish, you know, having 2 weeks to train with the squad, with this international break, even though a number of players are away on international duty, both Socceroos and Ollie Roos. But, yeah, good signs for them. And, you know, when you've got McLaren scoring, you know, Antonis, if he can come back anywhere near his best, I mean, we know what sort of talent he was, you know, a number of years ago before injuries really, really set in. You know, Matthew Lecky could be pushing for selection after the international break as well, and not long after that, Andrew Naboot. Good signs there for Melbourne City. Really good signs.
That's a really interesting point you made about the mentality as well, with Aurelio Vidmar in charge. That's really interesting. Also, Tommy, it's probably a tale of two playmakers too, because Tolga Arslan did limp off injured, and he's been hanging on to that injury with his toe for a couple of weeks, but he couldn't make it through this one. And on the other hand, Davila, let's just talk about that for a minute or two more, because we've spoken about Peña, Arslan, we spoke about a lot last week, but we've got a gem who's not new, who's been here for a couple of years, and it was just so great to see him pulling the strings. It was magnificent.
The really interesting thing about Ulysses De Vea is the number of times he has effective actions, things that actually change the course of the game. He's wonderful to watch, and there are a lot of players in the league who are wonderful to watch, but his execution of wonderful movement into a tangible outcome is really remarkable. Three involved in all three of the goals. I mean, lovely finish for the first, wonderful through ball for the third, and heavily involved in the second, putting the cross in. For Jake Holman. So if I was any team in the league, I'd be trying to sign Ulysses De Vea, because he's such a smart player. He knows how to make things actually happen, and just does it all in a beautiful way.
Yeah, great use of the body, you know, nutmegs, had it all. He's an absolute joy to watch, and you know, in this kind of form, I mean, he would have to be among the favourites to claim the Johnny Warren medal once again.
Well, they were staring at the summit for a couple of minutes. They were top of the league going into stoppage time. Wasn't to be, but very good signs from Miloš Stojkovski once again. Off the back of a win in Asia as well midweek, so plenty for them to look forward to there. Really impressive stuff from MacArthur to start the season.
It spills for Truan. Here is the moment. Tom Waddingham, the star of the Australian Cup.
for Brisbane Roar finally has a goal in the Isuzu Uday League.
Well, we end the weekend. Central Coast, well, they've gone down 2-1 to Brisbane at home. Not the start to their championship defence they wanted. In fact, equal with the worst start to a championship defence that has been experienced in A-League men history. Alu Kwol hit back after Florian Berenguer's early goal, but Thomas Waddingham, the teenager, got his first of hopefully many goals in the Isuzu Ute A-League. But then the game descended into, well, I don't know if it's controversy or it was just a thriller minute to follow. Harrison Steele's red card following Joe Coletti's a few minutes earlier. Once again, a cracking end, Tom, to a weekend of action, but not so for Central Coast.
No, and there are alarming signs there in the sense that going forward, they look good at times. And Marco Tullio is like almost single-handedly trying to keep him afloat. I mean, his through ball to Alu Kwol Mariners' goal was beautiful and just destroyed Brisbane's backline. But what worries me is that last season, the Mariners hunted in packs. They hunted in packs in attack and in defence. They created overloads, whether they were defending the ball or they were going upfield. And it's not happening this time. So when Brisbane take the lead through Florian Berenguer, Nicholas Mlusnic cuts the ball back from the byline. There are seven Mariners players in their own box, and nobody is picking up Berenguer. Now, I know they think the ball's gone out and a couple are appealing for ball having gone out, but that you've got to play to the whistle, firstly. But also none of them, the defensive structure isn't there. And so Berenguer has like a week and a half to put the ball in the back of the net. I'd be concerned about the lack of structure and intensity at the moment, because that's what was the hallmark of them last year and what drove them to the title.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Really concerning signs for the Mariners. And, you know, going back to the, you know, ball being over the line, I mean, Keltak was really good. I thought he was really solid yesterday. But, you know, just speaking of bonkers that players in this day and age don't play the whistle, you know, with VAR, because if it is out, it should get picked up. But, you know, on the flip side, Raw, really, really positive signs. I mean, they were a team. They were, you know, you thought, like, I'm big on body language, and it just looks so positive from Brisbane Roar's viewpoint. And, you know, you talk about Thomas Waddingham. I mean, Cairns has produced what, Steve Corica, Mary Fowler, and now they've got young Thomas Waddingham, who looks like he's a star in the making. He had four Australia Cup goals. He's made his young Socceroos debut, and now he's got his debut A-League goal to boot, and a really good composed finish. Probably a little bit harder than what it looked, but yeah, really positive signs for Brisbane.
Only you could talk about reading body language on a podcast, Davidovich. Seriously.
That's flashback.
I mean,
if only people could see your body language right now.
Yeah, how pleased I am with myself. Talking of the quiet underachievers, as I did a moment ago, Brisbane definitely included in that. I mean, they're playing some really nice football, and they bounce back from that walloping they got against Wellington, and they go to the champions and win 2-1.
Well, last week, Ross Aloisi decided to play the game in the media and have a go at his players with their attitude. Let's have a listen to what he had to say off the back of this performance.
Today was tremendous. You know, the fight within that playing group was outstanding, and that's, you know, what we expect from one another week in, week out. And yeah, you know, a little bit speechless with some of the work that the players put in today. At half time, Nevsy was I was speaking to him, and he was throwing up, and I thought he was going to come off or not go back on. Then you got Ryla Brownlee, who's a 16-year-old kid, and the amount of work that he went through in 30 minutes or 35 minutes. You know, you've got Jay O'Shea who looked younger as the game went on, and then, you know, you're Waddingham up front, the amount of pressing that he did. Flo Berenguer, you know, again, just class, but just everyone.
So he's a bit happier, guys, this week. And they just, last week was, we felt like they were doing well, and then Wellington found a solution to them. Over the course of 4 weeks, Dave, Brisbane are one of the feel-good stories of the season so far.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it appears that his strong comments last week paid off. It clearly, you know, resonated with the players. They reacted. I was going to say, I just hope that Scotty Neville didn't vomit on his suit, because he presented immaculately, I thought, on the sidelines yesterday. Ross Aloisi in his tailored Hugo Boss suit, but they were very, very good, and they're only going to get better. Agree with Brownlee, the youngster. He was really lively towards the end of that game. And just on the Mariners, look, I thought if there was one positive to take out of it, it's Alu Kwol. Great to see him scoring again in the A-League. Scored the goal in the AFC Cup against Bali United during the week, and I think he got a couple of Australia Cup goals as well. So, or one Australia Cup goal, another Champions League goal, or AFC Cup rather. But he hasn't played a heap of football over the last few years, certainly not as much as, you know, he would have liked. Hasn't scored a lot of goals. He, you know, that'll do wonders for his confidence, and he's the kind of guy that can really help lift, you know, the Mariners off the foot of the table.
Atulio, I agree, Tom, couldn't have done any more. I thought there were some good signs from Theo Harris. Of course, there was that penalty claim against Kai Truyn, which didn't go his way before Truyn went down the other end and actually set up the next goal. What did you make of that incident, his individual performance, and just a general word on the Mariners? Because four games in, there's going to be some questions asked. We've already seen two coaches shown the door already this season. The Mariners hasn't been like those other two clubs where you go, right, we need a change now to change, you know, to spark a reaction. What's the solution? What's the next step? What do you need to see from the Mariners to have some confidence that this campaign isn't going to, you know, go the wrong way very, very quickly?
Patience, I suppose. We have to remember how many players they lost, the significant coaching departures in the off-season. They put their faith in Mark Jackson, and I'd hate to see a club sort of react too quickly, unless there are things where, you know, we don't see behind the scenes. But on the pitch, there's enough positive signs there that like Mark Jackson's spoken previously about wanting his players to step up and score goals. I mean, the way that Alu Kwol took that chance, beautifully done. One touch with the outside of his right foot to control ball, one to touch, tuck it away. He almost had another. Turned Tom Aldridge beautifully on the edge of the box and shoots a couple of inches wide. Again, on another day, that's another goal, and maybe it's a different result. I think they've got to keep the faith, and because it is only four games in, and you know, a new coach coming in has got to be given time to refashion the team in his own image and put his stamp on it.
Yeah, and to underline Tom's point just quickly, I mean, you know, mixed emotions for them. They see Nectar Triantis scoring his first goal for Sunderland on the weekend. I mean, underlining the point about, you know, the effect of losing such quality players. I mean, him and Keltak as a back two, that's right up there. So, you know, him leaving leaves a really big hole, one of many departures. So they'll get better. They need to be given time. But in saying that, they also need to, you know, steady over the next three or four matches leading into Christmas.
You can see Triantis' goal on keepup.com.au. And I do echo those sentiments. There's been enough signs in those games to see that the patience can be granted to the Mariners, and they can build. Very disappointing for them that they do bring up the bottom of the table at the moment. With no games coming up this weekend due to the international break, just to recap the table, you've got Western Sydney leading the way on goal difference, but with Victory, Wellington and MacArthur all on 8 points. The top six is rounded out by Adelaide United and Brisbane Roar on 7. The rest of the pack, the chasing pack, Newcastle Jets on 5, Perth Glory 4, Melbourne City 4, Sydney FC 3, Western United 3, and the Mariners 0. But as Sydney FC showed, things can change very, very, very quickly in this league. Gents, before we wrap up, it's a big week, of course, because the Socceroos return to action on Thursday night with the first World Cup qualifier in the road to the 2026 FIFA World Cup against Bangladesh in Melbourne. Another one's rolled around. It's time for another World Cup qualifying campaign. What are you both most looking forward to seeing on Thursday night? Dave, to you first, and then Tom.
Yeah, I think there's four A-League players in the squad, so it'll be interesting to see how they all fare. But, yeah, some new faces in there as well. I don't think Bangladesh, you know, will cause the Socceroos too many concerns. But, you know, when I look at the squad, it's unbelievable to think how quickly or how many players have been added even since, yeah, you know, the World Cup in Qatar, which was like less than a year ago. Extraordinary to think. So, yeah, just some of the – look forward to seeing some more of those new faces.
I'm looking forward to seeing players step up. You know, I've been doing some sort of maths on how we compare this squad with – 4 years ago. There's the average age is roughly the same, but I think there's a lot more younger players. There's 12 players in this current squad who are 25 or under, which is twice as many as last time. So there's younger players in there, and players like Keanu Backus, who went to the World Cup and looked so at home. I'm looking forward to seeing those players step up. And it pains me to admit this as a Southampton fan, but I'm quite looking forward to seeing Cassini Yenge reproduce his Portsmouth form for the Socceroos as a number nine.
Great to see him kicking on at the moment over there, and brings a profile of a player to the Socceroos that we don't have in the current makeup of the squad. So that I agree with that, Tom. It's exciting to see a squad that has, over the course of a World Cup cycle, some really interesting options to explore and examine with some good young faces coming through. Gents, Tom has got the better of us once again, but always fantastic reviewing the weekend's action with you both. Enjoy the weekend off, I suppose, but enjoy the Socceroos being back in action again. Another World Cup cycle rounds out, or begins. And thank you to you for listening and making it to the end. If you got this far to another episode of the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast, always good to talk through this ridiculous and wonderful league of ours. Until the next episode of the podcast, as always, enjoy your football.